Okay, so my name is Geoff Quartermaine. I'm the CEO of Perseus Mining Limited. Perseus is an Australian-listed gold mining company. We're also listed in Toronto on the TSX. All of our activities are focused in Africa, on the African continent, where we operate three mines, one in Côte d'Ivoire and one in Ghana. And we've got two development projects that will be brought in line progressively over time. So it's a rather unusual company in that sense that we have full exposure to Africa, but we're performing extremely well in terms of generating cash flow and earnings. And we represent a very attractive investment alternative to people who are looking for value.
Geoff, welcome to London. You've been on the road for a bit. You were in Zurich last week, or earlier this week, so I should say. How was it?
Well, I thought it was very interesting, actually. There's a group of investors in that part of the world who are not the sort of people we see every day of the week. And we had very, very good meetings and found it very productive.
Do you think, obviously, everyone's talking about gold at $2,400. That's a little bit exciting. Was the conversation pretty much around price?
There was a bit of that. There was a bit of that. I think certainly that's inspiring a lot of people to look for gold investments. They weren't, from earlier in the year, it was pretty hard work to get people interested. But there's no doubt that the gold price has sparked a lot of attention. And as always happens in these circumstances, people are expecting this to continue forever.
Okay, now talk to me about the projects. Okay, we're in Ghana, we're in Côte d'Ivoire, Sudan, and obviously recent news is Ore Group. And is that closed now?
Sorry, the.
With the recent acquisition.
We do actually, as of this morning, I think we're about 81% accepted. So
okay.
Pretty close.
Pretty close. Why'd you make the move now?
Well, it wasn't a case of making a move now. It was we're closing the deal now.
Yeah.
We actually have been in discussion with Ore Corp for many years, in fact, and we've done due diligence a couple of times over the, over, but we could never quite get to the finishing line for one reason or another.
Must have been distressing to see them talk to someone else.
Well, it was a little disturbing. I mean, without talking out of school, I mean, we had made a number of non-binding indicative offers to them, all of them conditional on completing aspects of due diligence. For one reason or another, they weren't too keen on us doing some of those studies. And so we walked away from the whole transaction. But what did happen was after the alternative offer emerged, shareholders were not that impressed by it and came to us and said, I think, you should consider bidding. So we said, well, there's an interesting idea. Why don't we think about that?
I was intrigued by the way that you went about it because you were building up a position and you were able to do it relatively quickly, which I guess caused issues for the other side. So it's strategically, technically, that worked in your favour. But I think the thing that really works in favour was the amount of cash you've got in the bank.
Oh, well, that was helpful, although not necessarily for Ore Corp shareholders. I think a lot of the Ore Corp shareholders would have much preferred that we issue Perseus paper. But having all the cash on balance sheet, I mean, my job's to look after my existing shareholders, not future shareholders. And so we made a cash offer rather than issuing paper and diluting. But look, I think at the end of the day, Perseus is the better steward of that asset of the two people who are offering to buy it. We come to Tanzania with a significant cash balance. We come to Tanzania with a history of operating in African countries and with a team of people who know how to develop and operate projects. Now, it's one of those rare occasions, I think, that where our objectives align perfectly with the objectives of the government. The government is very keen to see the Nyanzaga project brought into production in the very near future. And Perseus is equally very keen that the Nyanzaga project is brought into production very soon.
I mean, and just talk about the deal a little bit longer, if you may. You've done a cash transaction, but if I look at your last previous two acquisitions, whereas shares were involved, they've done rather well, haven't they?
Well, they've done exceptionally well. I mean, certainly the Amara shareholders, for instance, have done extremely well, and so have the Orca shareholders. Yes, indeed. So it's an interesting sort of a situation. But when we had the amount of cash on the balance sheet that we had, by issuing more shares and diluting existing shareholders wasn't really the right approach, we felt.
And the right approach for you seems to be making margin because you're sub $1,000 US dollar AISC. You were already making margin before this recent surge in gold price. How do you do that?
Well, how do we do what? I mean,
well, it's Africa. If I look at the North American market, they kind of look at, oh, Africa's complicated. It's hard to do business there. It's expensive to do business there. I mean, what's the reality on the ground?
Well, the reality is you can run a business well or poorly, no matter where you're located. Now, we choose to run our business very well, which means that you need to drive it very hard every day of the week and make sure that you keep your costs down, that produce as much gold as you can possibly do. And you look after all of the stakeholders. I mean, a very key part of our business, and I think this is a part of the reason why we've been successful, is that we live and die on our mission. Our mission is to generate benefits for all of our stakeholders in fair and equitable proportions. And what that means is that everybody who has an interest in either our projects or our activities gets something out of it. I guess in the old days, people would have said, well, you go in and you maximise benefits for shareholders, but we've come to realise that unless everybody gets a benefit from it, then life becomes very difficult, and quite often shareholders don't get anything at all. So the trick to it, though, is to find what is the fair and equitable distribution of those benefits. And, you know, we've had some very interesting discussions with governments and various stakeholders over time along the line, said, okay, so you would like a bigger share of the pie, would you? That's right, we would. Okay, so who are you going to take it from? Are you going to take it from the employees? Or do you want us to pay less to the community or the government? I mean, perhaps you want to take it from the shareholders. Well, the shareholders won't put their money into the project if that's the case. So what we need to do is to sit down, have a mature conversation and say, how can we best share the benefits of what we do? And that is a conversation we have from time to time. And I think that all of our stakeholders are reasonably happy at this particular point in time.
Right, okay. And then you talked about incentivizing stakeholders and so forth. But talk to me about culture, because then culture is really important. You've touched on some of those points there, but the culture is important. So new shareholders coming in understand what you're about, and you seem to be about driving things hard. Your phrase, you've got to drive things hard. How do you drive things hard and make sure that everyone's on side?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? We have clearly defined a set of values inside our company. And we've explained and discussed with all of our employees, and everyone's bought into that proposition. And it's quite simple, really. I mean, the four values are teamwork, integrity, commitment, and achievement. Now, teamwork, individually we can achieve a lot, but working together we can achieve even more. You know, integrity is pretty self-evident. Commitment, you know, we give it a good shot, and achievement, we do what we say we're going to do, folks, every time. And with those sorts of thoughts in mind, I think we've got a really good group of people. I mean, one of the things that I think we can be quite proud of is the team of people we've put together, and they are very aligned in their thinking.
Right.
And that, we through the strength of that unity, I think we are able to do a lot of good things.
Right. Your last point there in terms of you do what you say, and again, quarter after quarter, you hit targets, you do what you say, and that's good. So I want to talk about the 535,000 ounces a year last year. I think that was the number. Give or take a bit more, you can tell me. 536 you're building up a kind of portfolio here. I'm going to assume you know what you're doing because you're delivering ounces quarter after quarter after quarter. I don't need to have a conversation about in taking you out about production and operations and so forth. I'm interested in this growth component to what you're doing. This recent acquisition, bringing into the family, I presume with the same ethos, that the same drivers, what's the end game here for you? Because it's all Africa, so you know Africa, but is there a number that you're going after? Are you going to be just a cash cow? Are you looking to be picked up by one of the majors? Well, what's the end game?
Oh no, well, I mean, what we're seeking to do is to offer to investors an opportunity to invest and get regular returns, basically,
right,
to be consistent, to provide an opportunity where people can invest and know full well that the company's going to continue to deliver more or less what we're doing into the future. So, you know, we don't want to be a flash in the pan where we, you know, produce 1 million ounces this year and half of that next year. We've sort of deliberately set ourselves so that we can produce around this 500,000 ounces for the foreseeable future. And we do that in a couple of ways. I mean, one is we work at an organic growth proposition. So what we've been doing for the last 5 years is to ensure that whatever we deplete, we replace. Interestingly enough, if you look at the reserve inventory for the three core mines, the reserve inventory at the end of 23 was identical to the reserve inventory in 2018. And we've been able to replace each year. And even though we've been increasing our production, we've been putting more back each year. Yeah. So we've been able to maintain that. But eventually, you know, all good things come to an end. And eventually you will deplete your reserve inventory, and we need to bring new projects in to replace those as they tail off. Now, a couple of our projects, one of our projects is a relatively long life project, that's Yaouré. The Edikan mine has a lesser time ahead of it, and Sissingué even shorter. So what we've been intent on doing is bringing new projects to the table that are producing as those projects tail off. Mm. And the first of those projects we acquired was what we call the Mayor Sand project in Sudan. And had it not been for, you know, the fact that hostilities broke out in the country in April of last year, we would be up to our elbows in developing that project right now. Now, the fact is that we're not doing that. But as you quite rightly point out, we've recently embarked on this takeover of OreCorp and Nyan Saga, and the aim is that we will get into the development of that very shortly and be producing out of that in 2027.
Well, yeah, the benefits of a portfolio approach in terms of de-risking for sure. Does that, with regards to obviously Tanzania, are there lessons learned from the other African plays, or is each country different? Are we wrong to assume Africa is just, you know, one entity?
You're totally wrong to assume it's one entity. I mean, that is absolutely the case. I mean, you know, 51, 52, 53, 54 countries, depending on your definition.
Aye.
But quite aside from that, there's also some very marked cultural differences, marked religious differences, differences in history, like colonial history, et cetera, et cetera. So everywhere is very different, and every place has different requirements. Now, how we manage that is that, once again, coming back to our core values are inviolable. We will not breach those under any circumstances. However, with that caveat, we are willing to bend our model to accommodate the local circumstances and ensure that people get something from it. And I can give you an example of what I mean by that is, so we were recently approached by the government in Ghana, who said, we want to buy gold from you and pay you in CD for it. Now, you know, when they initially said that, they was like, well, gee, they're not sure about that. But as we thought it through very carefully, because we don't normally do that. Normally we would, you know, have our gold refined and sell it into the international market. When we thought about it, we said, well, actually, provided the Ghanaian government pays us the official rate in terms of gold price, And provided they convert it at the official exchange rate, well, that is good for us because we need local currency to pay local bills. Mm-hmm. They want gold to boost their foreign reserves. So we took on this approach, which was not our norm, but both sides benefited from it. So that's an example of the fact that, you know, we will bend the model to suit the circumstances, provided that we're not breaching our core values.
Right. In terms of these kind of economics benefits of another African play, are there things that you're bringing over from the other operations, not just in terms of personnel and knowledge, but are there other ways of ensuring that you can keep that sub $1,000 ASIC number?
For sure. You know, like, I mean, for instance, if we come across a technology that works in one part of the business, and you know, we're very happy to share that with the other guys and get them to.
Are they all similar sorts of ore bodies, which are same type of gold? Which
no, well, say? I mean, not exactly identical, but for instance, all of our mines at the present time are open pit, although we are about to do the first of our underground mining operations in the not too distant future as well. So at the moment, given the fact that they are all open pits, there's a lot of commonality between them. But they're not the same, you know, mineralogy sort of thing.
Right. And how do you think the market is going to view this enlarged portfolio Africa play of yours? Because as you mentioned at the beginning, you're in ASX. You've been on TSX for a bit, but perhaps this is sort of TSX reborn in a way. 2.0, I think some people refer to it. And what's your message to the North American market about, one, not just the case of doing business in Africa, but in terms of the way that your business delivers it's on the economic side of things, cultural side of things and this kind of acquisitive nature that you have?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure I need to, you know, give too many messages to the North American market, because actually 40% of our stock is owned by American investors.
Okay.
In fact, you know, US investors make up the largest proportion of investors that we have. So we were very well known to a lot of investors in North America, or a number of investors. Okay. But I guess what we haven't really done in the North American market is pursue the smaller investor, the retail investor, the family office kind of investor. And maybe that's an area where we do need to start to communicate more effectively to those groups of people, because quite clearly there is a large amount of money available out there, and there's a large group of people who are wanting to have perhaps the security of an investment in gold. And I think De Perseus can offer that, because and can offer it with something that some of our peers can't offer. What we can offer is not a guarantee, 100% guarantee, but a very high probability that we will be in business when many others won't, because of the fact that we've got low operating costs and we've got multiple mines in multiple jurisdictions. We've got a good spread of risk, even volatility.
Right. You've explained why you did the transaction, recent transaction in cash. But going forward, you're building up, especially right now, the margins just grew by $300 or more this side of Christmas. So what's the plan with the cash allocation? What's the best use of that cash? What's the best return on that cash?
It's a very good question, actually, and it's something that, you know, is exercising our mind. And I might add, it's a subject that has been probably the most prominent subject of conversation with the 80 or so investors I've met with over the course of this year. What are you going to do with the cash? How are you going to deploy it, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, we clearly have a need to, as we were talking about, replenish the portfolio and ensure that our production, et cetera, and cash flow can continue into the future. But beyond that, we also want to be returning that to our shareholders as well as the other stakeholders.
How?
Well, that's the question. Now, what we have done is several years ago, we implemented a dividend policy where we guaranteed shareholders basically that they would get a 1% yield, come what may. But each year, when we've identified the fact that we've had surplus cash, we've paid a bonus as well. So the first year we paid 1.5%. So half of that was half percent was a bonus. Last year was 2%, 1% base, 1% bonus. Come 30 June this year, we'll be looking at the situation and saying, okay, we've got this amount of cash on the balance sheet. This is what we expect to generate in the next 6 months. This is what our immediate needs are. These are our longer-term needs in terms of keeping the business going.
You're debt-free, right?
Sorry?
Debt-free.
Well, we are debt-free at the moment. That's right. We have no debt. But that's not to say that that's the right way necessarily.
No, I was going to ask you about the balance.
Yeah. I think a little bit of leverage is appropriate. I mean, given that, you know, gold's a fairly cyclical kind of thing, you need to be fairly circumspect about how much debt you'd take on and how much. We do hedge, and a small amount of our production. We hedge about 25% of our projected production over a three-year period.
Okay.
But what we do with the hedging is we're very, very disciplined in the way we manage that. We in a market like this, we sell into the lowest price hedges on the book and replace them with the highest, at the higher price. So what we've done over a period of time is average up the value of the book. Now, I think at the end of December, the weighted average price in that book was like $2,080 an ounce. Right. I don't know what it is exactly today, but it would be a lot higher than that.
And what would make you change that 25% or lower and stuff? Because I think a lot of retail, you talk about expanding into the retailers, they don't quite understand it. In a high price gold and barrel, why wouldn't you take all the margin? Well, what's the benefit to you?
Well, it's like this. The investor can come and go. Mm. When gold price turns down, the investor goes and sells his shares and walks away.
Yeah.
We as a company still have a responsibility to all those stakeholders that I mentioned earlier on, and their benefits take the form of cash. Now, if the gold price was to collapse, we wouldn't be able to generate that cash. But by hedging in the way we do, we can guarantee that we will generate a significant margin, come what may, virtually. Or, if the gold price went to zero, then clearly you wouldn't. But, we under most normal trading or recent historical trading patterns, we can still stay alive. And, given that, I think the market seems to have adopted a willingness to accept higher costs. I think there might be a few people who are a bit surprised when the gold price collapses. Now, we will still be in business perhaps when some other people are struggling. And that's the benefit of the hedge book, and that's what investors should take note of, because, yes, we will enjoy the high price while they last. We're going to sell 75% of our production at record gold prices. But on the off chance that the price falls, we'll be around and other people won't be. And, you know, to sit here and say the gold price will never fall, well, I can tell you, you see the colour of my hair. That's what I've got left.
You're only 30 years old.
I'm only 30, that's right. You know, that's the product of having lived through cycles.
Talk to me about the margin, because all businesses should be focused on margin, right? That's the reality. But when I look at mining and I look across the board when we're doing our analysis, it's kind of shocking, the not just value destruction in terms of projects blowing up, but in terms of even the ones which are producing ounces, are selling those ounces, they are perhaps less than efficient, is a polite way of putting it, right? Mm. So margin is really, really important. At the moment, we're sort of seeing costs have gone up the last 2 years, but they seem to have plateaued a bit. Gold's going on a run, probably two years later than most people thought it would do. So the margins are going to increase. How do you, and I know you've described to me an environment and a kind of your brand, as it were. How do you ensure efficient running of the company going forward? Everyone needs to be on the same page. It's just human nature. When there's lots of money floating around, people get a little bit lazy, a little bit casual. How do you ensure that you don't?
Well, you know, that's what management's about, right? That's, you know, I mean, I guess...
Those are the ones I'm accusing, usually.
No. Well, I mean, I guess we're all captives of our experience. I mean, if you look at my history, I was in the gold industry when gold was around $200 an ounce, $250 an ounce or something, I think it was. And what I noticed at that stage of the game, I mean, everybody pulled their belt in big time to be able to accommodate that. What I noticed in the aftermath of that, when the gold price ran up, the people who let the belt off didn't do as well as the people who said, you know, we could maintain the same practices even though we're selling and increase the margin. And that's something that remained with me forever. So our focus is on producing as much gold at the lowest possible cost every single day. And we don't look at the gold price particularly, other than for some hedging purposes or whatever. But our focus is to keep the costs down, generate as much cash as we can. We don't want to be standing here going, oh, we're a million ounce producer.
Yeah.
To be frank, if we could make, as much money from 500,000 ounces as others do from a million, we're pretty happy about that, actually. So it really is about making cash. It's about making cash per share. Yeah. It's about making cash per ounce. And that's the focus of our attention. And it really does need everybody to realise that that's the important piece of the business.
Right. Talk to me about ambition, willingness to build a portfolio or not, or time the portfolio, because M&A garners a lot of attention. It also does a lot for the safe value of the company, etc. But the synergies sometimes that need to be achieved aren't achieved. The cost of the acquisitions sometimes are expensive. And there's lots of things that can go wrong in terms of an aggressive expansion plan. How do you time yours? I've looked at the last three acquisitions and they seem to be spaced out. Give yourself some time to breathe, get it on board, and then think again. Yeah. But in a market like this, it must be slightly irresistible when you're looking around.
Well, it could be, but there's a time and a place for everything, right? And, sometimes you just have to sit there and keep your hand, sit on your hands.
Mm.
You know, it's a funny thing, because when you do have cash, as we do, it seems to burn a hole in other people's pockets more so than it does in ours.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what it means is that they just want you to spend. They love, everyone wants you to go and do stuff because it's exciting. Sometimes it makes sense, sometimes it doesn't. It only makes sense if you're going to be creating value through that expenditure, that investment rather. And I think in that regard, you know, we talk about industry and things like that. It is interesting to look at the gold business and look at it over a period of time, and the return on capital across the industry, it's pretty awful, actually. It's quite horrible.
Yeah.
And you ask yourself the question, why is that the case? I think a lot of M&A that's occurred over the years has been pretty damn dumb. And you wonder why people do that. If they thought about it, they wouldn't. But they're being pulled and pushed. They're being pulled by investors who want growth. We're not going to invest in you unless you're a million ounce producer or unless you've got this scale. So there's a definite pull factor. Now, I know the investors deny that, but that is the case. But I know that they do that because I've sat with them and talked about it. And then you get the push coming from the corporate, where I want to be a million-ounce producer because that makes me a big shot or whatever the case happens to be. So you've got this interesting dynamic going. You've got a lot of drive to do transactions, and sometimes they just don't make sense. Yeah. Sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't.
But there seems to be that people are kind of focusing on the wrong thing. I want to be a million ounces, but not necessarily talking about margin.
That's correct. You know, absolutely. The very rarely do you hear people focus on that. We just happen to be a bit different. We like cash. We like generating cash flow. We like generating earnings.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's a function of the fact that my dad was a bank manager and he might have beaten that into me as a young child or something, rather to be, you
back,
know, to
back
be
in the days when your father could beat stuff into you.
Of course.
It's a phrase I use a lot. Jeff, I think that's a really good understanding of, you know, what's going on up here and what drives you and therefore what drives the team. I look forward to seeing, you know, how the new project is integrated into the company. I look forward to continual quarter after quarter's delivery on those ounces. And, of course, for me, margin is king. Making money is what it's about. So appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Excellent.